Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. A cougar hain, a cougar, cougar hain. Joe at RT Punk IE. Next Thursday, Landmark Hotel, Carrick on Shannon, the beginning of the Easter weekend. And I'm also very conscious the beginning of the, not the beginning, but the culmination of the Easter ceremonies for a number of religions. So I'm conscious of that. But anyway, on Thursday, next Thursday, next, all the Funny Friday crew will be in the Landmark Hotel in Carrick on Shannon. Loads of giveaways, loads of fun to start the weekend off. And also, if you are in a group, and which has happened before, you are more than welcome. But if you are coming, let us know, and we can talk to you on the programme, or maybe we can look after you on the programme. If you're in a group, be it a men's shed or a women's group, if there's such a thing, or the ICA, or a daycare centre, or whatever, or a seniors group, please let us know in advance, so at least we know you're there. And if we can make your weekend a little bit brighter, we will do our utmost. Now, Geraldine contacted us. Geraldine, good afternoon.
Hello, Joel. How are you?
When were you diagnosed with sleep apnea, and what is it?
I was diagnosed about 10 days ago.
Okay.
And it's where you stop breathing in your sleep. And the pauses can be anything from 3 to 10 seconds.
Okay.
And this can happen several times in the hour.
Okay, so what prompted you to visit a medic that delivered this diagnosis?
Well, it was my husband who noticed that I was pausing breathing during the night and
okay.
Then coming back with a loud snore-like noise. And this is happening several times every night.
Okay.
But he kept insisting it's not snoring, it's something else.
Okay.
So I went to the GP
Was he worried?
Yeah, he was actually, yeah, because I used to stop breathing for maybe 10 seconds at a time.
Good God. So did he wake you up and say, Geraldine, are you okay?
Yeah, he'd wake me up and say, are you okay? And I'd say, yeah, I'm fine.
Well done, fair play. Thank God he was awake.
Well, yeah, well, I probably woke him with the...
Okay.
The snort.
So you went to... Were you worried then when he said it to you?
Not so much worried, no, because I had never heard of such a... I heard of such a thing, but I didn't think I was going to be somebody who had it. And I didn't know anybody who had it. You know, it's not hearing every other person talking about. But during the diagnosis, that 1 in 4 people suffer with it.
I didn't know that. So what? Talk about diagnosis. What is the cure, if?
There is no cure, apparently. There's no cure for it. It's this machine. It's called CPAP.
CPAP, it's okay.
Continuous positive airway pressure.
But what
anywhere
is... I jumped ahead. What is the prognosis with it? Will it get worse? Will it disappear? Does it happen only at certain times? Like, what is the analysis of this sleep apnea? Why? The why of it?
I don't know what the why of it is. They say it's normally people who are overweight, obese. Yeah. I'm neither of those things, but, you know, I'm average weight, I'm average height, I'm...
But did the medic say this is something to worry about?
Yeah.
Oh,
they
God.
Said it's, they said it can cause... stroke, heart attack,
oh, good luck.
Blindness, and the possibility of just dying in your sleep.
God, you're very calm, Geraldine.
I'm not really.
it can cause...
I'm looking for help. I'm wondering, is there anybody else out there? They're telling me 1 in 4, but I don't know anybody.
What did the GP give you for sleep apnea?
Oh, nothing at all. The consultant, it's a...
No, you have to go to that level, okay, yeah, tertiary.
Yeah, and they give me this CPAP machine, which is...
Okay.
It's like a face mask, your nose and mouth.
And you put it on when you get into bed?
You put it on and it's blowing continuous air through, and it's keeping the airway open. It's the airway it seemingly collapses when you're asleep.
And does the is there a tube in your mouth?
No, there's no tube in your mouth. There's it's a tube from the machine to the mask, and the air is coming into the mask. So it's like a closed-in mask.
Yeah, and is that manageable for you?
Yeah, it's not manageable for me because I'm very claustrophobic anyway, before I ever had this. But they're telling me you'll get used to it, but I'm finding it very difficult.
Okay, so I see your query. I'm wondering, has anyone else ever gone through this? Obviously, they have Linda in Abbey Field in County Limerick. Linda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What's your situation, please, Linda?
I am on the machine for about 10 years.
Ah.
And like Geraldine, I found it very hard to get used to it.
Okay.
But my mask seems to be a smaller mask than what Linda's wearing. I have one that just fits on my nose.
Okay.
And it's not. I did try the one that covers your mouth, but I found that a little bit daunting.
Okay. Well, tell us how you were diagnosed to begin with, Linda.
Just, as it happens, just like Geraldine, because my husband that detected too, because I wake up in a fright, more or less.
Okay.
And I went to my local doctor, and he sent me to the specialist in Tralee, and He said I was very bad with it at the time.
Okay.
And I shouldn't even have been driving, because if I was driving, I could doze off as quick as anything, which was quite dangerous.
All right.
And if I was going to journey, I'd have to pull in at the side of the road and sleep for 10 or 15 minutes, and that would bring me through.
Yeah.
But since I start using the seat, it's brilliant, because I can have a good night's sleep. With sleep apnea, when I was diagnosed with it, I have a good night's sleep, and I don't feel the need to sleep during the day.
Okay, now Geraldine says, when I put the mask on, which I've been doing now for a few days, I suspect, Geraldine, she's only diagnosed 10 days ago. Geraldine says, I feel claustrophobic. How did you get over that?
I didn't feel as bad as Geraldine seems to feel, because mine was a smaller mask. My mask only covered my nose, and the tube from it went back to the machine. I didn't really find it, but it will take her time. She'll have to persevere. And I find if she just relaxes, she's not relaxed just yet.
Okay.
But if she could relax and maybe turn on the radio, it would take her mind off it.
Are you trying to tell me, Linda, the radio will send her asleep?
Well, it'll help. It'll help her to take her mind off it.
Depends. And Linda, what about, and that's great advice for Geraldine, but what about saying to Geraldine, should she practice wearing it during the day and not panic and sit there and try and read a book? Or?
No. There's no need to. Just put it on. There's no need. She'll get used to that. And she'll get so used to it that actually she'll find it difficult to go to sleep without it, giving her a week or two. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever.
Is that any way reassuring, Geraldine?
Right now, well, it is reassuring, everybody is saying this is what happens. You do get used to it, but...
Give me a picture, so to speak, Geraldine. You're lying in bed, okay? You put on the mask, okay?
Yeah.
And you've only been doing it for the sleep apnea mask.
For 10 days now, mouth and nose cover.
Are you sitting up? Are you lying down? Are the lights off?
Lights off, lying down. Just getting into bed as normal, but as soon as I turn either left or right, the mask moves.
Yeah, of course.
The air comes out everywhere and it's not working properly then, and it makes noise if it's not working properly. So unless the mask is properly on, covering your mouth and nose, it won't work properly.
And what about Linda's suggestion is relax, listen to Cathal Murray, listen to the radio.
I haven't tried it, but I will. I'm willing to try anything.
And what about saying to Geraldine, will you tell me, can she sit up in bed with the mask on and read a book or...
She can, but there's a kind of a noise from it, like heavy breathing noise from it. So she may not be able to concentrate on a book. But when she gets into bed, she should adjust the straps at the back so that it's fairly tight on her head.
Yeah, but she's claustrophobic.
See, the mask is going to be fitting into her mouth and nose anyway. So the straps, when she turns, the mask shouldn't move. You know what I'm trying to say?
Okay. Well, you know what? You know people who wear the eye pads, the old fashioned, the Greta Garbo eye pads, for want of, you know, the two that black out your eyes.
Yes.
Well, Geraldine, people get used to them fairly quickly. I know there's no sound, and they then discover that they can't sleep without them.
Well, it'll be the same with Joe with the CCAP when she gets used to it.
Yeah. Okay. Good advice there, Linda. What do you, are you anyway reassured, Geraldine?
Reassured, yeah, and delighted with any advice. But okay. I was hoping that I could do something other than this device at all. Is there anything else?
No. Yeah, well, you see, you can't.
No, there's nothing else. There's nothing else, Geraldine. You know, but if you find it very hard, okay. I would go back to your specialist, and they may be able to give you one with just covering the nose.
Okay, now Geraldine, right. Do you live in a noisy area? Is there traffic on the road?
No. Yes, but not much.
Nothing.
Not
so you
noisy,
never.
No.
You know the way people move into a house and they get a fright, especially in Dublin, our city, if it's on a suburban road, they didn't realise the traffic was going to. But after a week or two, it's gone. They get used to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Stay there, Geraldine. Don't worry, Geraldine. We'll get you help. Ronan O'Farrell in County Wicklow. Joe at rt.ie. 51551 is the text number. And if you want to send in a WhatsApp voice message about sleep apnea, and we're trying to get Geraldine not to panic. And she's been prescribed by her consultant one of these CPAP machines. So she's staying on that machine. I don't want people ringing in saying if you get a teaspoon of salt and a tadine of the herb that grows backwards at the top of a garden in the shade, and you burn it in the microwave and you put that under your arm before. I don't want any of that nonsense. She's been prescribed the machine. That's what the medics say. So we're sticking with the machine. Let's try and get Geraldine to ways of getting used to it. Ronan O'Farrell. Ronan, good afternoon. When were you diagnosed with sleep apnea?
Similar thing about 10 years ago, okay. And I've been using the CPAP successfully.
Again, Ronan, what prompted it?
My wife would have noticed a similar pattern to waking in the night or making noise in the night, not quite snoring. So what happens is when you go to sleep, the muscles in your neck and the back of your throat relax and they effectively close off the airflow. And your body reacts to that by waking you up. May not always consciously wake you up. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it doesn't. So just to put this into context of where I was with this, it was severe. So this was happening approximately 53 times per hour when I was trying to sleep.
That's
so effectively, I wasn't getting any restful sleep from it.
That's nearly once every minute. Every minute.
Nearly once every minute, yeah. But you don't actually consciously wake up.
I know.
But your body reacts to it. That's why, like for me, the fear of dying in your sleep is minimal. It's no more than anybody else would have. I don't feel that sleep apnea will kill me in the night because I stop breathing. My brain knows what's going on, wakes me up, makes
but
me
you
breathe.
Need to go to a medic or a coach.
Absolutely. Yeah. So okay. I have been to a couple of consultants about this. I've had a similar experience. Now, what I have found is that the provider of the CPAP machine is probably the best resource you can get.
Okay.
They're dealing with hundreds of people who are in the same situation. They know what they've gone through and what they've done. I had a similar experience with the feeling of being claustrophobic and not enjoying the mask. And I actually use an even smaller device. It's nasal pillows. So they just basically are like a small plastic fitting that fits into my nostrils. Mm-hmm. And it has the tubes attached to it. So nothing covering my face, nothing like that.
Okay, it's like...
And straps to hold it. I've also got, you can get a special pillow that has indents on the left and right side. Mm-hmm. So when you're lying in bed, if you turn on your side, you don't knock the mask with your pillow. It falls into the indent. It's made specially for it. So
where do you source that pillow, for example?
So the people who provide the CPAP machines will provide all of these extra services for you, and they are a great resource. They will.
Okay.
I know the guys I use. They will let you try out masks. They will let you try out machines. There's different settings on the machines as well. So mine works where the air pressure ramps. So it doesn't start off at the full pressure. It starts off slowly, and over a period of about 5 minutes, it ramps up to the prescribed pressure that it needs to be at, which makes it far more comfortable. You don't get a sense of air being pushed into you.
Okay.
So it can be quite successful. And like as the other caller said there, you know, you will start feeling, you get restful sleep from it. And one thing you will notice is that you'll start dreaming again, which is a very, very strange thing. May not have noticed this, but you mightn't have had a dream because you're not getting into the right state of sleep for you to dream. So a real good sign that things are working for you is if you start dreaming.
Yeah. And by the way, where do you put the machine? The machine.
The machine.
It's on your bedside locker.
Yeah, it's a small enough machine. It's not like a big thing. I suppose it's about a 4-inch cube. The particular machine I have, and they come in different designs, and you can put like a water reservoir on it. A lot of people find that the air dries out their mouth and their nose at night, but you can put a humidifier on it as well, makes it slightly bigger, and that helps with that. But again, this is all the kind of thing that the supplier of the device would be quite happy to go through with you and help you with it.
But Ronan, does I presume Geraldine would have to go back to her medic to say...
No. Like, your medic will prescribe... the airflow. So it's an actual prescription device. And incidentally, you can claim back for this on your GPS and everything.
Okay.
Masks and everything you get for that are all covered by it. So
very good.
It's not hugely expensive if you do it right. But the actual supplier of the machine will help you with different masks designs. They normally have like a showroom that you can go down to them with your machine, plug it in, and they'll let you try on different masks and see which suits. I have to say, moving away from the actual nasal mask to the nasal pillows was a real, real big difference and far more
The description that Geraldine gave me, Ronan, is, you know, the mask that a firefighter wears, breathing apparatus, which covers...
Yeah.
So
you think of what I use compared to that is, if you think of a scene in a hospital and somebody in the bed with an oxygen, little tubes of oxygen, it's probably about 3 or 4 times that size. It's not that small.
Whereas now,
but that's the difference you're talking about.
And whereas now we see people walking around, you know, they have emphysema with the little shopping trolley, and you'll see two little tubes going into their nasal cavities. Yeah. That's what you have, is it, at night time?
It's a variant on that. It's bigger than that. It has little pillows on it, but it is the same kind of idea. And there's less of it to move if you move in the bed.
Okay, good point. Yeah, because Geraldine, you're finding all that awkward, aren't you? The straps.
Yes,
and
at the minute I am, but I'm only 10 days using it at the moment.
Okay,
but
we want to get you comfortable with it. Okay, Ronan, Ronan, can you be cured of sleep apnea?
You can't be cured of sleep apnea.
Does it go away?
It's part of your makeup. If you were really, really obese and heavy and you had excess fat in the areas where it is, you could do by losing weight, but it's just your anatomy. It's the way you're built internally. And when muscles relax, everything sags down, and unfortunately sags down and covers over the windpipe.
Okay, Ronan, indeed. Thanks indeed. It's Ronan O'Farrell. We come back. Stay with us, Geraldine and other callers. Joe at rt.ie, the WhatsApp voice message, 087-4848-888. Joe. At
rt.ie. 018-715-815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Darren, good afternoon. Darren.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Have you any advice for Geraldine? She's diagnosed with sleep apnea 10 days ago, was given the CPAP machine. She's finding the mask, which covers her face, her nose and her mouth, very, very awkward. The straps when she turns over, and she hasn't got used to it. What advice do you give, Darren, please?
Well, hello, how are you doing, Geraldine? I was diagnosed in 2016, and I was put on the CPAP machine.
Is that the radio on in the background?
Oh, no, I have it turned down there now.
Good man. Now, I wouldn't blame you having the radio on. It's live line. It's fascinating, as always. Go ahead, Darren. It's gone, Darren. Where's Darren gone? I said turn off the radio, not turn off. Oh, good man, Darren. Come back.
No, I'm here, yeah.
Good man, good man. Tell us, Sam.
Yeah, I was at the machine with the nasal pillows.
Okay. And the advice for Geraldine is?
Yeah. Well, the trick is to keep your mouth closed. You have to train your mouth to keep your mouth closed. Because if you open your mouth, it doesn't work as effective as with your mouth closed. That's what the consultant told me. You have to train to keep your mouth closed.
And Darren, can you recall, I know it's 2016, when you were first diagnosed, but can you recall how long it took you to get used to it?
I say less than a week. I was grand.
Okay.
Less than a week. Everyone is different.
And Geraldine, you have a terrible... not your fault, Darren. But Geraldine, how does that sound? Try and keep your mouth shut, but I suspect the more things you try and do, the more complicated. How are you hearing that? You sound a bit fed up.
Yeah, all these things are great, but when you're sleeping, you don't know if your mouth is open or closed.
What about Geraldine saying to you, you have the machine. It is on your face. Even if it falls off for a few seconds, there's nothing untoward's going to happen. In other words, what I'm saying is try and relax into it. You're in a better place, literally, and you're in a better position, literally, with the mask on you, than you were 10 days ago. Okay, Damien. Yeah, okay, you don't have to respond. I understand you're anxious. Damien Ryan. Damien, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Now, you're telling me that you got rid of sleep apnea. One, when did you get it? Why was it diagnosed and what happened?
So I was diagnosed about two years ago.
Okay.
When I was 36.
Right.
Now, my father had it before, so that was kind of an issue. And also, I was overweight. Okay. Still am overweight, but I got it then. Mm-hmm. And it was given to me, same thing, you get the CPAP. Now, I elected for the nurse to come out to me to the house. Okay. To fit the machine, because I wasn't happy the same with putting something over my face.
Well, that's interesting.
Now, they said
it?
They talked to me over the phone about it and all that, but I said, no, I'd love if the nurse would come out, and they did come out. And she fitted it to me and all that crack.
And did that make a difference? Now,
I was advised to shave my beard, which I didn't. Okay. But they also said, yeah, that made a difference to me because it reassured me, and she kind of showed me how to do it, stepped me through it. But at the same time, at night time, I found it very, very difficult at the start.
Okay.
And it was very frustrating.
Do you remember how long, Damien? Because
about 3 months.
Okay.
2 or 3 months, I found it quite difficult. Now, I stuck with it as much as I could. I didn't do it every night.
Okay.
I did it as much as I could.
Okay.
And there was nights I couldn't do it because I have small children, so if one of them was in the bed or anything with us, I wouldn't have had the machine on. I used it as much as I could, and I just found that, like that, the same thing. I'm a mouth breather because I have problems with my nose, and I think that has contributed to it too.
Okay.
But I found that if you tried to breathe through the nose, it did help, and it actually made you feel more relaxed.
Yeah.
But the same thing now, all grown up through my life, if someone put their hand over my mouth, or I couldn't do snorkeling, for instance, when I was young, that thing would frighten the life out of me.
Yeah.
But it did take a while. Yeah, and I know you're telling someone to relax. And that's always the thing about someone that, you know, doesn't want to hear, but that's...
But what would you tell her, Dan? What would you tell Geraldine?
I think, as you said there a minute ago, Joe, she's further down the line now than she was.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you just take small little steps. If it doesn't work for you one night and you're frustrated with it, take it off and leave it till the next night.
Okay.
Or leave it a day or two and then come back to it again and try it again.
But do go back to it.
You know, do go back to it. Do go back to it. But don't be, you know... Don't be fretting yourself out of your life trying to get it right.
And what
you know,
what about
doesn't have to happen?
And what about trying to get this? You know, people said listen to the radio.
Try
and get distracted.
Joe, if I missed you during the day, I'd always put on your podcast at night time, of course, try and relax myself.
Are you saying I put you to sleep?
Yeah.
You're saying I put you
exactly. It's just your calming dulcet tones, Joe. You know.
Oh, good luck.
But yeah, just that sort of a thing. Now, what I did at the start was went into the spare room, for instance, and I just darkened that down and try and go down. Right. I go to sleep and I felt very tired. I didn't force myself to go down to bed. You know, I just waited until I was quite tired and then go down.
Okay.
But it has helped me, definitely.
Okay,
now, along with that, I did lose a bit of weight and that helped too.
Okay,
and because I was dealing with consultants, they kind of felt there was more to be investigated there, and I kind of pushed that a small bit, and I'm going to go in now for a kind of a nose operation.
Okay.
To my nose, which was damaged actually when I was 16, 17, playing rugby years and years ago. So that's, they're going to go in now and do a job on that, and that might even help more.
That's interesting.
So you know, if there was a feeling that that might be another factor, you could possibly kind of push for other avenues. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Geraldine, say with his name, Geraldine, are you tired when you go to bed?
Yeah, I would be tired going to bed. Before I actually got diagnosed, as soon as I sat down,
okay,
I was asleep.
I'm conscious that you haven't been able to get used to the mask in the last few weeks. But when you go to bed now, have you slept during the day?
No, I haven't slept during the day at all. No.
And do you go up to bed at a certain, have you routine?
Yeah, fairly good routine, yeah.
Well, Damien's saying wait till you're tired.
Yeah.
Would you stay up a bit? What time do you go to bed? What time do you go to bed at, Gerald?
About 11 o'clock, half 10, 11 o'clock. Yeah.
That's fairly...
And I get up about half six.
Well done. That's fairly normal.
And Joe? Yeah.
Yes, Damien?
My machine, I had it on rental and it's gone back, so I don't have a machine anymore.
Oh, do you not? Okay.
And no, my wife would feel that it has improved an awful lot. Now, big part of that is your diagnosis. So I think Ronan there was on earlier, and he had a very severe diagnosis with 57 an hour. Yeah. Mine was a mild diagnosis.
Okay.
So there was, I was told at the time, you know, if you did this and you were kind of solid with it for a good while, it would help. So I don't know exactly what the diagnosis would be there.
And you know what, and you again, were an hour, help. So to speak, Damien?
I think I was something like 14 or 15 an hour, something like that.
And what are you, Geraldine, an hour?
The night the study was done in the hospital, I was 21.
Okay.
I did my study at home. I found it easier to do it at home.
So you stopped reading 21 times each hour, Geraldine. Well, that's one.
Yes.
Remember, Ronan was 57. He was every minute. You're every between 2 and 3 minutes.
Yes.
So don't be too worried. I'm saying this to try and get you used to that mask. Okay, where's Michael? Michael in Edenderry. Thanks, Damien. Michael in Edenderry. Where's Michael in Edenderry?
Hello, Joe. Maybe you have the address wrong. I'm Michael from Ballinter. Can you hear me?
Yeah, how is Ballinter spelled, Edenderry? But anyway, Ballinter's in County Meath. Edenderry is in County Offaly, isn't it? Okay, Michael.
It is indeed.
Okay.
Now, Joe, I would suggest to her that she just stick with the mask and just have a little bit of patience. When I was diagnosed, I got the mask last November, and it took 2 or 3 weeks to get used to it. But now I'm very familiar with it. And I was diagnosed last July with extreme sleep apnea, is what they called it.
Okay, and do you know what you wear per hour, Michael?
I do 45 per hour. And they describe that as extreme sleep apnea. And anybody above 15 is considered to have sleep apnea.
Okay.
Now, for about 20 to 25 years, my wife had been urging me to go to the doctor because frequently at night time she'd give me a D and tell me I wasn't breathing. So I just spent one night in Connolly Hospital.
Yeah.
And then they recommended the mask. And since I've been wearing the mask, I have lots more energy.
Okay.
Because the type of sleep you get when you have sleep apnea is not that great. And frequently when I went on holidays to my daughter in Austria.
Yeah.
Her husband often said to me, God, you're sleeping all the time. If I sat in a chair and started to read, I'd fall asleep. But with this present system now, much more energy. And also I have a tendency to lie in my back when I'm sleeping anyhow. Now, I have the mask over my nose and mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to use when you're lying on your back. That's what I find, Joe.
Okay. And you got used to it. By the way, Michael, have you looked at yourself in the mirror with the mask on, and did you get a fright?
I didn't mean it to come out that way. Joe, any time I look in the mirror without the mask, I get a fright.
Good man. Boom,
so
boom.
What I
well
do
done.
I turn my back to the mirror, or I turn the mirror around so they don't have to face it. No, Joe,
good man.
I put it on at night and I just use the torch. I turn off the light, use the torch while I'm putting it on. And it's no problem whatsoever now at the moment. And my last reading was 16.
Okay, you're down.
But they have told me they want to get it down to 5.
Okay. Well, so far we've heard 16, 18, 21, 45 and 57. 57 stop breathing, so to speak, per hour, which is the highest. You're at 16 at the minute. Geraldine is at 21.
Right. Well, that's when she was diagnosed.
Yeah, exactly.
She might
be
a little bit lower now since she's using the machine, Joe.
So your reassurance to Geraldine is what, Michael?
Oh, just bear with it for a little while.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I found it more an inconvenience than anything. But now I've got totally used to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you
and,
see,
and as I said, my mask covers my nose and mouth.
Okay. And you see yourself doing without the machine?
Well, I have no idea of that now.
Okay. And you mentioned you were... What country did you go to? An Alpine country? Where were you? Switzerland or...?
Austria.
Austria, sorry. Do you bring the machine with you? And can is it part
absolutely.
Of your... Is it part of your baggage allowance? Is it over your 10K?
No, Joe. I just carry it on my shoulder. It's my male handbag.
And is it classified... But is it classified as a bag or is it classified as medical equipment?
I'd say it's classified as medical equipment because I've taken it with me twice.
So you're not going to be penalised?
No problem.
Okay. Yeah. Geraldine,
and
the
I make sure I wear it every night.
Okay. Geraldine, what about that point? I think it was Martin who made it earlier, about he had his fitted. Somebody came out to his house and the nurse helped him.
Yes.
Have you had that?
Yes, Joe.
But they came out.
Medical crowd,
oh, that's Michael,
I won't mention the name, I suppose. The medical crowd who provide the machine call to the house and give you direction as to how to use it.
Okay. Geraldine, thanks, Michael. God bless you. Michael, have you ever been in Edenderry, given that I thought you were in Edenderry?
I've forgotten you.
It's lovely. Ah, no, it's a lovely...
I probably passed through it.
Okay, go to Míle Maith. That's Michal in Ballinter in County Meath. Geraldine, what about, have you had someone to come out to the house to help you adjust and strap and pull and tug?
No, actually, because I had the sleep study done in hospital and...
Is it worth putting in a call or an email or a letter to say, could someone come out?
No, the nurse in the hospital fitted it and I had to stay a second night in the hospital for them to see how it worked the second night after the sleep study. So a nurse helped me with...
And you know, I don't want a name because I presume there's different suppliers. Is there a name of a supplier of the company you made and supply your machine on the machine?
Yeah, there is actually.
For service or for whatever they call it.
And they gave me a leaflet with a phone number for contacting and all that.
Well, then
too.
Ring them.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I can do, but what I was hoping somebody would have come up with something to cure this.
There's tips.
But now I'm hearing there's no cure for it.
Yeah, but also, Geraldine, remember where you were coming from at the beginning of the conversation was, you were telling me you could die.
Well, that's what the consultant told me.
Okay, well, if untreated in rare situations, but none of our people have talked about dying. Okay, Geraldine, stay with us, and I'll come back after this break. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding, available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Clyde Davison, we're talking about sleep apnea. It began with one call from Geraldine, and the country is, we're told 1 in 4, I didn't know that, suffer from sleep apnea, which is this event that you stop breathing in your sleep. Now, so far, our callers, Geraldine stops breathing 21 times an hour, Michael, who we just heard, he's down to 16. Then another caller was 18. Another caller was 45 times an hour. And one caller so far, Ronan. Now, by the way, I'm not looking. This is not a competition. I don't want people going up on this. I want them going down. Ronan, he stops breathing 57 times every hour. As I said, he hasn't had a time for a dream in years. But once you settle it with the machine, he's back dreaming again. Clyde Davidson. Clyde, how did you find out you had sleep apnea?
Joe, how are you doing? Quite funny, actually. My brother tells a very funny story about away on a rugby trip in Edinburgh, and allegedly I was a heavy snorer. I never believed it myself, but anyway.
Okay.
In the course of overnight, obviously, he couldn't sleep with my snoring on the other side of the room, and he got up and put a pillow over my head. And then he noticed that I'd stopped breathing, and he got a fright, and then I came back to life and frightened the life out of him. He tells a very, very funny story about that. As a consequence of that, I went on a sleep study. My GP referred me to a sleep study, which then led to a dental procedure.
Ah.
I use a, it's to all intents and purposes, like a rugby gum shield.
Okay.
But it's you get a mould made of an impression made of both your upper and lower teeth.
Yeah.
And the bottom piece of the mouth guard goes in, and you bring the top, and then you extend your lower jaw about 2 millimeters, and you clasp the top into the bottom, and it keeps your airway open. It's a procedure. I got it done in I can't remember where the dentist is, but it's not too far away from you in Marino. It's the Crescent in Marino.
Okay.
But it works, and there's no need for a mask. You pop it in, you get used to it. It's kind of awkward for 2 or 3 weeks to get used to, but it's like putting a gum shield in playing a game of football, and the bottom clasps onto the top.
Yeah,
and it's extendable. If you can find it, if your airway isn't open enough, there's a tiny little screwdriver, you can extend it out and open it more, pull your jaw out a wee bit.
Okay. By the way, you said when your brother, you were snoring, you're on a rugby trip. I can imagine that now. And your brother, he hit you with a pillow.
He hit me with a pillow and then put the pillow over my head. But he thought he'd suffocated me. And then I came back to life and frightened the living daylight out.
Oh, he thought you had expired.
He thought he'd smothered me with a pillow.
And do you remember, did he grab you, Clyde, and say, I love you, brother, I've always loved you, don't die on me, don't die on me.
He went to punch the head off me.
That's right. Okay, but it was him, it was he who, yes, okay.
But it works, the away on rugby trips, the lads now share rooms where I used to be banished into a room on my own. But it definitely works. I don't know the name of it, but it's a double mouthpiece, and the bottom clamps onto the top, extending your lower jaw to keep the airway open.
Okay, that's another suggestion. Thanks, Clyde. And how is the brother?
He's very well.
Are you still on?
He shares a room.
Are you still on first name terms?
We're members of
the
Scary Rugby Club, so we go
in
a lot of trips. So
we're
back sharing rooms together.
And is this playing or spectating, Clyde?
Spectating.
Great. Better.
I'm of an age of spectating.
Great. And long may it continue. Thanks, Clyde Davidson. Where is Sean Watts? Sean, good afternoon. You suffer from sleep apnea.
What advice?
Give Geraldine advice. Give her succor. Give her help.
I don't think I'm going to win the competition. I was 48 per hour. So I'm running second, I think,
in that competition at the moment. Yeah.
All I can say to Geraldine is she's saving her life. That's what she's doing, Joe.
Okay.
Because if you're diagnosed with sleep apnea and your consultant says you have to go on the machine and you don't use it, a lot of people don't understand why you're on the machine. It is to keep your airways open, but it's also circulating oxygenated blood through the whole system of the body. So all the organs are getting oxygenated blood instead of non-oxygenated blood. And that's what causes the damage.
Okay.
That they say you can die from sleep apnea. And over the period of years, if you have sleep apnea and you don't use your machine, the organs will start to, shall we say, die off or whatever. That's the long-term thing. Now, I don't know what age you would have to be for that to happen. And I was diagnosed in 2019. My consultant said I had severe sleep apnea. But I was fortunate in one sense that I actually have a brother-in-law who was on a sleep apnea machine for about 15 years previous to me being diagnosed, and I had a layman's understanding of it.
Okay.
Now, the thing that I would say to Geraldine is she's taken the first big step, and the next steps hopefully will be a little bit smaller. I found that if you just kind of sit on the side of the bed, and as one of your previous callers said, I actually used the nose pillows. I started off with a nose mask, but I found it very irritating on the bridge of my nose and was causing it was quite sore. So I graduated onto the pillows, and my wife would be glad to hear. Sometimes I can keep my mouth shut, especially when I'm sleeping, you know. And but I'm happy enough. And there's times I wake up during the night for whatever reason, and I forget I actually have the mask on.
Okay, I understand that. Yeah, that means it's working. Geraldine, and I know people are intelligent. Thanks, Sean Watts. People are intelligent. They know to consult their medic when they're thinking of changing things. So Geraldine, bear that in mind. I also think you should, if there's a number on your machine, you ring the number and see will they come out, even though you feel you've got the education, so to speak, or the training in the hospital. By the way, just the ongoing developments in the Fine Gael. Josepha Madigan, who's the Fine Gael TD in Dublin, as you know, public representative in Dublin Rathdown. She has just resigned as a minister, and she said she will not be contesting the next general election. I think she tried to get the European nomination a few weeks ago. She will be voting for Simon Harris to be next leader of Taoiseach. I'm not contesting, Nick. I'm resigning today from my ministerial position. And that's the first bit of news. The second bit of news is that everyone in the business here and outside this organisation are saying, you know, they've changed it. They're an executive meeting this afternoon, Fine Gael executive, to change the closing date, to bring forward the closing date of nominations, because it's such a, as I said, at 1:45 yesterday, it's a done deal at that stage with Simon Harris as the next Taoiseach. Well, the word is that, the speculation is, and no one's going to die, so we needn't worry too much. The speculation is that they're bringing forward the closure of nominations to noon on Sunday. And that means on Sunday afternoon, great news day, great day to get it. Well, it would be covered anyway, given the significance of it. On Sunday afternoon, there is a Fine Gael convention for their MEPs to select their MEPs, obviously, for the Euro election on June the 6th. So that's another Fine Gael TD. I think that's 12 at this stage. Saying they will not. I don't know what the lay of the land is out, and I don't know Dunleary Rathdown. The only person I remember is we had a call, that's about a year ago now, about a local rep, Councillor Anna Granger, who set up in her local phone box a defibrillator, and this seemed to be a great idea, and then was one in Stony Batter, but that's my only knowledge of that area. But anyway, Josepha Madigan has resigned as government junior minister, and she was at one stage, she was culture, heritage, and the Gaeltacht, and since 2020 she's been Minister of State for Special Education and Inclusion. And ironically, yesterday evening on the 6 o'clock news, the Taoiseach in waiting at this stage, as I think we can now call him, he spoke about, as I mentioned in this programme yesterday, how he got involved, the accidental politician, because his brother Adam, who we all people know, he's part of the national discourse on autism and Asperger's, he was diagnosed with that. So a bit of space opening up for Simon Harris to make changes if he wishes. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And a reminder about next Thursday in Carrick and Shannon, Landmark Hotel. Everyone is welcome from doors open at 12 o'clock. And as I said, if you're a local group or men's shed or you want to come as a group, please let us know. You're more than welcome, but just to make sure we look after you properly. Jerry Owens. Jerry, good afternoon. Shoplifting. People are, as we heard yesterday, shopkeepers, retailers, especially small retailers, saying it's an epidemic. You have a number of solutions, you say, Jerry, to shoplifting, if there is such a thing as a solution. Go ahead, Jerry. Jerry, you there, Jerry?
One comment was made about people who fill their tanks with fuel and then drive off.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, I've seen it done in a few stations in Cork where they have prepay. So maybe it's time to have all pumps prepay. And that would eliminate that overnight almost by a change in the pumps. Maybe awkward, maybe a bit inconvenient, but it would be a solution.
But the prepay then eliminates a cash element, doesn't it?
It does eliminate the cash element, but look, to a large degree, there are so many people who are using Revolut or a bank card, then that solution is a problem. I'm not saying it's not without its problems, but that still doesn't stop somebody going into the shop and prepaying by cash and then going out to the pump.
Yeah, okay. You'd say, give me 50 quid worth or whatever. But
they key it into the pumps and then it's done.
Initially, okay, I take a point. And it's about shoplifting, which seems to be rampant. As we heard yesterday, what did Jim Towey say up in Ballotreen? It's been his worst Christmas ever for shoplifting, ever. Can't believe the stuff they're walking out with. Alcohol, babies, nappies, baby formula. Well, I understand. And by the way, as you know today, Tesco and Dunnes have matched the Tesco price reduction on the baby formula. Now, we've had a number of people saying, why can't I use my 10 euro voucher on the baby formula? That's a government decision. Maybe they'll do something now because baby formula has become so expensive. But that is a government decision. You can't. There can be no club car points for baby formula. But anyway, I'm going off the point. I'm just saying, baby formula now in the supermarkets I go into, they had these security tag on them. They become so expensive. But anyway, Jerry, now the problem people were having with that prepay was the machine will take. You put in, obviously you don't know how much petrol you're going to be putting into your car or van or truck or whatever. So the card will take, about 100 euro initially. And if you only spend 54 euro, you will get the 46 euro back into your account. But it can take a couple of days and people get confused. Isn't that right, Jerry?
No, I accept that. But like, look, each individual, I suppose in some respects, if they're buying fuel at a petrol station, chances are they're reasonably adult. And they should be familiar with how these machines work. So when you put your card in, you can dictate how much money you want to spend. And given the price of fuel today, you don't need to fill the car right up to the brim. But you could get an estimate of what it costs to put in 3/4. If you're doing it regularly, you get an idea of how much 3/4 of a tank takes. And then you fill it to there and you're done.
If your fill is less than the amount you've nominated on your credit card, you don't get the money back immediately. You'll get the money back, but you don't get it back immediately, and that panicked a number of people when it came in. But that's easily explained. Now, what's the second idea you have about shoplifting epidemic, Jerry?
Yeah, okay. So to a large degree, it just seems to me that there's an element of going back to the old ways where the shopkeeper filled your basket for you. Now, if you had a situation, it's click and collect maybe in some respects, because you enter a lobby in the supermarket or the retail store and you enter in what you want to buy, and a staff member will collect those items, they will bring it to the till, and then you pay for it and take it away. Or you shop online, it's not a case that you want to have it delivered at a time that might be convenient to you, but you make your order, punch it in. Yeah. And then when you get to the till, that's when you pay for it. But you look, to a large degree, there's an element of people having to adjust their behaviour, and it's sad that a very small proportion of the population who are shoplifters have caused the problem for everybody.
Yeah, well, the small proportion seems to be getting bigger, Jerry. And I take your point about a bank of computers, but that's not available to our small corner shop. They can't be installing. Like, the simple thing in a small corner shop is, in every shop, you leave your bag. There's a receptacle at the door. You leave your bag. If you have a bag, you leave it at the door. You leave your empty bag at the door. So you can't go through the supermarket.
And I accept for the small shopkeeper, that may well be the answer. And it's not a case of one size fits all. Different ranges of of shop are going to have to apply different rules for their own circumstances.
Yeah, but Jerry, just keep in mind, hang on now, Jerry.
Just one second.
Yeah.
Just one second. Let me finish the point.
Yeah.
The biggest problem for me is if this continues to become a pandemic of shoplifting, then the retailer may be forced to increase his prices to balance the loss he's making on the shoplifting. That means all of the people who abide by the law end up paying for the pilferer.
Absolutely.
And that's a huge social issue. And look, there's a huge number of charities who depend on the contributions from good, honest people like the Vincent de Paul, who then provide support for people who are in need. They might decide, you know what, I'm not going to bother because I'm doing it in the shopkeeper's till anyway.
Okay. Now, the other thing, I'm just so conscious of the smaller shop. I'm talking about four or five people. The smaller shop has been hammered. One, most of them could not afford these reverse vending machines where, you know, there's 15 cent, 25 cent tax or deposit on every plastic bottle and every can. So they couldn't afford the reverse vending machines. They can't take all the stuff and dirty, filthy bottles over the counter. So they charge the deposit. They pay the deposit. And when they go to the wholesaler, when the stuff is delivered, but the money back is to the Aldis and the Tescos, because they all have the machines, and the Aldis and the Tescos. Though I heard someone recently saying their machine was vandalised, not an Aldi or Tesco. The machine was vandalised because people think there's money. There's no money in those machines, lads. Stop kicking them and breaking in. There's no money. The only thing they give out is a receipt, a docket, which you bring in to Aldi or Lidl. You don't bring it back to the little shop where you bought your stuff. And then the other question which people were asking the last few days, though I don't see it highlighted on the Return website, they're doing a lot of advertising on the journal, these advertorials or whatever questions you... If you throw the bottle or the can, which a lot of people are, if you throw it into your wheelie bin or you throw it away in a dustbin, people are saying, where does the 25 cent or the 15 cent go? I can tell you where it doesn't go. It doesn't go back to the shopkeeper. That 15 or 25 cent, and there's a lot of them from what we're hearing, goes back to return.ie. It goes back into the coffers of the organisation that set up this scheme. So they're going to do well. And I'd love to have that monthly figure from them. They're giving us out monthly figures of 10, 3 zillion, billion to the power of 12 bottles returned. But can we have the number, the amount, please, every month that Return are getting for bottles that are not returned? Because they're the ones that get the money. Okay, Jerry, people, shopkeepers are looking for ideas all the time. So that's appreciated. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, of course we can understand on Taoiseach at 47, after 7 years as Taoiseach and, 24 years, and apparently yesterday I heard when he was 12, he was going to Brussels with the European People's Party. So a change of career, possibly for, well, in the short term, a change of career from Taoiseach to backbencher. And that looks like it's going to be from this coming, well, obviously the Dáil has to sit when Simon is elected leader of Fine Gael at noon on Sunday, and then the Dáil has to vote and Leo has to go to the Oras and hand in a seal of office, and then Simon goes up, or he's sent for, so to speak. Can he form a government? The answer is yes, with the deal with Fianna Fáil and the Greens, and then he becomes a Taoiseach, a change of direction for at 47 for Leo Varadkar. Now, Philip Dolan, what age are you, Philip, at the moment?
Hi, Joe. I'm 75, going on 76.
And what happened at 74 that you changed? You turned your life around, Philip.
We have a singing, a Celtic common singer circle in Knockcrockery, in the village where I live.
No, well, yeah.
And it's been run and is still running by Declan Coyne for the last 40 years almost, and it's been a great nerve centre for the village. And Declan has done marvellous work. We've had great groups here over the years, including Lancome, Lisa O'Neill, Rhiannon Giddens, Frank Hart, Landless, Sonny Davis, we could go on and on. We've had the best of the cream. Well,
tell me about your change of career before you change career again on me.
There was one night where Pat Collins, the film director, came to Knockaulty with Thomas McCarthy, who's a traveller singer of background Tullamore.
Okay.
He came to Knockaulty to do a documentary on Thomas, because Thomas has been a stalwart of ours for the last 20 years, and he always stayed with Marina and myself here in. We live in an old railway station in Knockaulty, so he stayed with us. So he wanted to come back here to do the documentary. Did the documentary, and then Frank, or Pat Collins, and Thomas stayed on for our singing session, which happened that night.
Very good.
And I was telling a story from my home place in Glengevlin, West Cavan. And Pat Collins was looking for a character for Jamesy for the Rising Sun movie that he was.
That They May Face the Rising Sun, that wonderful, wonderful piece, masterpiece by John McGahern. And Pat Collins is filming it, is he? He was.
Pat Collins was preparing, he was looking for casting for the film, and was looking for the character Jamesy. I think my story rang some bells with him, and he came back about a week later with Maureen Hughes, the casting director, to my house here in Knockaulty, and they did an interview for maybe 2 hours or so, and then they said afterwards the phone and said the part is yours if you want to take it, and I said yes. Yes.
And Philip Dolan, I want people to remember that name, especially for next March, the Oscars. Philip, did you actually do an audition, or Pat spotted you, so to speak?
I don't know. Pat heard me telling the story from Glengevlin, and I think it was the type of character I think that he was looking for the part of James, that would be sort of like a rustic person from the area that McGahern writes about. In Leitrim.
Leitrim, yeah.
And the character Jamesy was the same age as myself.
Okay.
He turns out to be a likable enough character in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I describe him as a hooer for news. He'd go anywhere for news.
A hooer for the news. Okay, yes.
Any news. Yes. But he's also a likable person in that he adopts the young couple that come back from England to Leitrim. And the young couple would be Joe and Kate, who are the principal characters in the movie, and that they might face the rising sun.
Yeah.
And I suppose Joe and Kate could also be John McGahern and his wife Madeline, who came back to Leeds from Border Farm and lived there until he died. Yeah.
And Madeline is still there and a great part of the community.
Madeline is still there. Yes.
And Philip, when did you film your part?
So that was in March, I think it was. Then we had rehearsals for a couple of weeks in Linan in last summer, 12 months, for quite a few weeks. And then afterwards we did the film in Clonbore, Cornemona, Lochtifui, Man Valley.
Okay, all over the world. It didn't film in Leitrim, no?
No, it didn't film in Leitrim. The lake that was suitable was Lochtifui.
Because the lake features so strongly.
And I think so, the surroundings of the lake was
okay, so what was the experience like?
It was fantastic. It was the best summer of my life.
Okay.
Probably the nicest group of people I've ever worked with. Pat Collins, I think, I don't know, because I've never worked with actors before, but they really were the nice. Barry Ward is the principal character.
Okay.
And he's the man who plays Joe. Anna Bederke, who came from Germany, plays Kate. Ruth McCabe, who's a well-known actress.
Oh, brilliant.
She's
actress,
my wife. Well-known
voice on radio for adverts.
Yeah. And in the book, she's not long suffering, but in that she tolerates Jamesy and she sort of says, stop that. And I think in the film, I think there was a part of that where she had to tolerate me and my lack of experience, but she was really good. Barry Ward was particularly helpful to me, because whenever we did a scene and I was anyway doubtful, I got a great thumbs up from Barry, as much as say, well done. Richard Hendrick, who was the film man, he would also give me a thumbs up. Pat Collins, who was the director.
Okay.
I've been tagged with comparing him to an old cattle dealer who used to. I remember the cattle dealers in the fairs in Dowry years ago. They'd lean against the wall, chewing a bit of grass, and then at the last moment they just make the move and come in and get the right animal. And that was Pat. Pat could stand there. He never sort of showed any emotion, whether he was cross or angry. I never ever heard a cross word on the set. Nobody ever shouted at anybody else. It was one of the happiest work conditions I've ever been in. It was
I thought you were going to say to me, Philip, it's one of the happiest film sets you've ever been on, but given that's the only one so far.
My only one ever. It's the happiest work condition.
And Philip, do you think at 74 you'll stay in the business?
I have no idea. But you talked about Oscars. I've won all my Oscars because I had the best summer of my life. I met the nicest people that I could ever hope to meet. Marina, my wife, the summer became my manager. And my agent. We got whisked over to London. With wonderful time in the hotel on the Strand.
No, Philip, what you say is you jetted over to London. Jetted. Film stars don't fly; they jet.
You don't
jet over to London. You jetted into London.
Is that it? Yes. I remember. It's another one. We had a great time in London. My sister Margaret lives in Hayes. She's been there since 1960, and she organised, along with Philip, her nephew, a great gathering of my clan.
And the first time, Philip, you saw yourself on the big screen was when you were 74, obviously. Was that like? Did you put your head in your hands?
It was quite amazing. I've seen it a few times since, and it's quite humbling because it's a beautiful movie, Joe. And I would advise anybody to please go and look at it because it's a really beautiful work. The music is haunting. It's lovely. It's like a piano, single notes on a piano.
Okay.
And it's a haunting music.
Okay. And I just wonder, is it streaming anywhere? Because I know it was out in 23.
No,
it's not yet.
World premiere in London in October last.
Okay.
And the Irish premiere in Dublin on the 2nd of March in the Lighthouse in.
Even though it says 23 on the bump I was looking up this morning, you're saying it's only in the picture houses now, as they say.
It's just at the Irish premiere on the 2nd of March, and then it's going on general release on the 25th of April. I think it's in 50 cinemas. Nationwide on the 25th. But got a slew of nominations for the IFTAs, and that's brilliant. Coming up on the 20th. It's got Best Director for Pat Collins, Best Actor for Barry Ward, Best Supporting Actor for Lala Roddy, Best Supporting Actress for Ruth McCabe. So there's a slew of those coming up on the 20th.
Sean McGinley is in it, the great Sean
McGinley. Sean is brilliant.
Anna Baderic, and the great Brendan Conroy is in it as well.
Brendan is brilliant.
Catherine Bourne, Declan. That's some cast. Declan Conlon, magic. Dervla Crotty. Breed. Philip, when the IFTAs were being, the nominations were being announced on Morning Ireland, were you hesitating over your porridge that morning or your Weetabix? Were you hoping?
I'm happy with that.
Go and see the movie. It's called That They May Face the Rising Sun. It's by the wonderful John McGarren from County. Well, he is. He made County Leitrim in that sense. And he put it on the literary map. Philip Dolan is in. He plays the part of Jamesy, and it's coming to a cinema near you soon. And it's already got loads of nominations for IFTA.
And when you said about the Leitrim connection, Joe, what I would hope is that this will regenerate interest in. Because recently I was in the home place by Seamus Heaney in Ballaghy.
Up in Ballaghy. I was only looking at it last night, but it looks incredible. Okay, maybe we'll get the home place in Leitrim for John McGarren. I know there's a museum in Drumshambo, a little museum. I gave a few little things I got from John McGarren over the years, and I gave them to that museum. And then there's the fantastic Country Life Museum in Ballinamore, which has the original agate that John McGarren. I think they also have John McGarren's school desk. Anyway, good Amila Maha, good Philip. Now, sticking with movies, Claire Louise Creed. And Claire, what happens?
It's just the whole reason I want to be on is just to say that, like that, a lot of cinemas, they aren't wheelchair friendly at all. For they put people in wheelchairs at the front of the cinema, and you get an awful creak in your neck, and your eyes get sore, and you get a headache.
And okay, I accept that, and it's a request to cinema designers. I know they say we do it for access. It's much easier to access the front of a cinema than for a ramp all the way up to the back. But then the other thing you're raising with us, Claire Louise, is the fact I didn't know this. That carers, your carer, obviously a lot of people like yourself in wheelchairs need a carer with them. And I always thought they got a ticket, so to speak, on the house because they're there as their job. But what did you discover?
Well, I usually did every other time I went to the cinema.
Okay.
But on this occasion, they said that the first 2 weeks, I think they said that you have to pay for your PA.
If a movie comes for the first 2 weeks, when it can be, well, a lot of people want to go in the first 2 weeks. You're saying for the first 2 weeks, the carer's free ticket doesn't apply.
Yeah, well, they told me that in Dunrum, but then there's other cinemas you go into.
And they do, okay.
And they let you bring the PA free all the time.
All the time,
and
okay. Well,
it's fair to say that.
Yeah, well, we got on to Movies at Dundrum, who also, they're a great big chain. They're Movies at Swords, Movies in Gorey. I think they have about 12 screens. Movie in Dungarvan, Movie at the Square in Talla. And we put that point to them, and they said, as of from now, we will remove the two-week requirement. In other words, they use this phrase, free list suspended. So they're saying, as of from today, every Movies at us are called Dundrum, Swords, Gorey, Dungarvan and The Square. I hope I'm getting them all in. They have removed that rule, so carer can go day one.
I actually didn't know that.
Well, there you are. Well done.
That they had that rule at all.
They've had it for a number of years. But anyway, it's gone thanks to yourself, and it's gone from this day.
But I don't think as well that wheelchair users should be just put up the front of the cinema. Like, okay, some people might like it, but I think there should be the middle or the back. I know, I understand that you can do it in every seat, but at least we could have a bit of a choice.
Yeah, here, and
we don't have any choice in anything.
And that's,
it seems to be able-bodied people all the time have a choice.
Okay. Well, then there's a little movement that they have Movies at, which are a nationwide chain, and a very good chain as well. They have removed the 2 week rule as of today for that carers cannot go and for the first 2 weeks they now can. Okay, good of me to Malcolm Clare, and I think designers hopefully will take on board, and we might get a few ideas as well about why wheelchair users, and Clare's own words there a few minutes ago, have to creak their neck looking at the cinema. Okay, research Richie Byrne, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Hilary Jones, series producer Annette. You can remember we are in lovely Leitrim with the Leitrim man of the year, Seamus O'Rourke, among others, next Thursday in the Landmark Hotel in Carrick on Shannon. And Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.